Welcome to the Heart of Healing, the Pandemic Episodes. I am your host, Tom Fuld. In these episodes, we will meet loving, talented people who, while coping with their own pandemic stress, are offering others understanding, compassion, love, and ways to relax and heal, even under the weight of current conditions. Listen with an open heart to those who in this time of crisis are offering their hearts and talents to all of us. And today our guest, a very special gentleman, Stephen Drew, who I can identify in various ways, but for today's purpose, I will identify as a pilgrim and an author. Welcome, Stephen, glad to have you here.
Thank you, Tom, it's delightful to be here and I'm honored to be able to speak with you, thank you.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, and I think you have a lot to offer to people who are going through this. There's a book you wrote, and I read it and was touched immediately and really knew that I wanted to do a talk with you. It's called I have it right into the Thin is what it's called. Well, I want to ask more about that in a little while.
Sure.
But to begin with, you wrote an article, and the title was, What is the Gift? Can you tell me a little bit about that title and what that means?
Oh, sure. Several years ago, it was right after I did my pilgrimage in Spain. We'll talk more about that shortly. I was sitting with a woman, a Unity church minister, and we were having, I guess for want of a better description, a session of sorts. And there had been some things that had been troubling me, some internal issues that had been troubling me. And I brought these up for discussion. And she seemed to be having an inspired moment. And she paused and she looked at me and she asked, "What is the gift?" All I could do was look at her quizzically, because frankly, Tom, I had absolutely no idea what she was talking about.
Right.
And I said, "Excuse me," or something like that. And she repeated herself. She said, "What is the gift?" And then we went off on a completely different tangent. It was just about as random a thing as one could imagine. And I thought, well, you know, that bears the mark of something spiritual. Usually it's random. And it happens in such a way that it grabs the attention. So I guess it was maybe a year or so later, I will tell you, one of the internal issues that prompted this was I was having difficulty with my temperament at the time. And I was reading through some Thomas Merton about a year after. Specifically, his book, Thoughts in Solitude, which is a book I highly recommend. I actually use it as a daily reader in the morning. And the page that I randomly flipped open to referred to our temperament and the gift of it. And I got chills from that moment. And since then, this idea of the gift has been expanding. It hasn't been replaced with new ideas. New ideas about what that gift might be are continually added to it. The gift of pilgrimage, the gift of being able to go to Spain and walk the Camino de Santiago, the gift of being able to write about it afterward, the gift of having it published, right up into the gift of this moment speaking with you. That it's all a gift. And I guess the question is, what do we do with it? So the article that you refer to was something that I wrote for a local magazine. And after they accepted it and thought it was just lovely, they up and folded. And so it still belongs to me and I can refer to it without having to worry about copyrights and things.
And you might also be able to submit it somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you never know. But, you know, our conversation, and when I sent this to you to have a look, you know, my thought was, you know, no gifts are ever wasted, right? So what they were looking for was just, this was back in March when the pandemic first really, really took hold in the culture. And specifically in our little corner of Connecticut, I live in Northwest Connecticut. I live in the town of Morris, population 2,300. And people from the city, from New York and Northern Jersey were flocking here. And the ones who didn't already own properties or have rentals up here were flooding the rental market. And the locals were getting very, very fearful and agitated about all this. You know, here come those New Yorkers again, kind of an idea. And it struck me just as a little counterintuitive in my case to feel that way. You know, where I had more of a welcoming attitude, you know, certainly these folks needed to isolate for a little while because of the area they were coming from. But, you know, fact is, if any of us who live up here were in the same position, we'd be looking for safety as well. It's what humans do, you know, in a crisis like that, life goes into default. It seeks to preserve itself. So then it got me on this tangent of it's actually really not a tangent, I suppose it's the core of everything, is this idea of oneness, that we all have this singular source and that some believe that we possess precisely the same consciousness, just expressed in different ways. And I really think that, you know, for me anyway, that was the early gift of it all, is being able to respond to such a thing with that sort of answer. You know, welcome, we are one. You know, let's get through this together.
Well, that welcome, we are all one, certainly applies to this pandemic. We are all, there is nobody that's not affected by the pandemic. There's nobody that has not experienced what many people feel is gigantic loss and grief during the pandemic, whether it's because they lost someone or because they've been just shut down. But there's a lot of strong feelings about it. And
I'm sorry, Tom, I didn't mean to step in, but that's the thing that's I find so striking about this thing, is the universal nature of it, you know, that virtually every person on the planet is affected by this. We've never, ever, at least in my lifetime, I've never experienced anything even close to this.
No, and then you add to that the other things that are going on around it. It's just gigantic. Right. And you say you are talking about a gift of us all being one, of going, you know, to see that gift. But let's go back in your life a bit, because you have had quite a lot of experience with loss, with some of the things that people are experiencing themselves now, and losing people and being afraid of losing people.
Right.
And that really is the beginning of your pilgrimage before you actually set foot on it. Could you tell us a little bit about what losses you experienced and what steps you took? And I say steps, not unseriously, but seriously steps that you took.
Sure. And I'll try to be as concise as I can with this, because I know, you know, time is sort of at a premium here, but you know, I'll give you the abridged version. This all happens in the space of 1 year. A close friend, a mentor, if you will, has a relapse of a chronic illness. My father-in-law, who was very much a father figure to me, becomes fatally ill. He passes. One of my three stepchildren at the time suffers a major health crisis. My firstborn child, my only son, hangs himself to death. The close friend I mentioned at the outset, who suffered the relapse of chronic illness, eventually succumbs. And to top it off, my 14-year marriage ends. And this, again, is in one year.
That's a pandemic unto itself.
Exactly. And in that article that you mentioned, I compared, you know, world endings. You know, this is, you know, what I referred to as a world dissolved in an emotional crucifixion. And at first, you know, the pain is certainly unspeakable. I would imagine crucifixion is a pretty painful experience, which is why I used that description, an emotional crucifixion. But I know this too from previous experiences, from a life of of these things is that there is, for every crucifixion, there is a resurrection. There's the crucifixion event, if you will, followed by a period of time, which in the biblical story would refer to Saturday after the crucifixion of Friday, and then resurrection follows. And I've never seen an exception to that. So, you know, pain being the precursor to change and awakening and unfoldment and awareness. I knew as on the surface, as horrific a year as that was, I knew that some good had to follow, that some good must follow from it. And so it did.
Hard to imagine that you could feel that, but you believe right. that, truly believe that good would come of it. But you did, and what did you do? Because that led you somewhere.
Well, it did. So in the aftermath of all of this, I'm at the time I'm 54 years old. This happened 10 years ago. I'm 54 years old. I have to find a new place to live. Everything changed. So I ended up finding the place where I still live. It's just a small, lovely town, Northwest Connecticut. And it's the kind of terrain, if you will, that lends itself to walking. And, St. Augustine of Hippo had a great quote attributed to him. He was dealing with some sort of a conundrum, and his quote is it is solved by walking.
And I can understand, Stephen, because right. even on a small level, these days, the first thing yeah. I do in the morning after I'm waking up, got fully awake, is go out and take a walk, maybe right. 10 minutes. Right. But that centers me. That brings me back.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it seems to be the classic go-to for humans, you know, if they're in, you know, some sort of upset, well, I'm going to go for a walk, you know, and I too make a daily habit of that. So, you know, this is where it gets a little weird, Tom. I had never had an experience like this before. So this
weird is wonderful.
It was at that. This is about a year or so, a little over a year after all this happened, and I've settled into these new life circumstances. And I had taken a summer off from work and was joining a new business, and so I was coming off sabbatical, if you will, and so it was a very, very warm, humid August day, and I was out for a good brisk walk, and you know I had a good sweat going, and it was just that kind of day, not really thinking about anything in particular, just the random brain noise that one encounters when one is walking, and I was thinking about going back to work and so forth. So we kind of have to look at this as a freeze frame thing. Picture me walking along, step. The foot comes off the ground, and here's what happens before the foot returns to the ground. The Camino de Santiago, the pilgrimage in Spain, comes into my life, is literally installed into my life as a complete reality. There's no decisional balancing, there's no I need to do this, that, or the other thing. And none of that comes into play. There is no decision to be made. It simply comes into my life as a complete reality, all the implications, everything.
And the reality is that you're going to do this.
That not just that I'm going to do this, it's as if it is, it simply is.
Is.
It is now.
Had you heard of this pilgrimage before?
Right. So my first awareness of the Camino de Santiago goes back into the 1980s, and I read a book by James Michener entitled Iberia, and the last chapter of that book, and anyone who's read Michener knows that to get to the last chapter, that takes a little stick-to-itiveness. He was a detail-oriented nonfiction writer, I'm here to tell you. But it was the last chapter of that book is entitled Santiago de Compostela, and he talks about the pilgrimage, and he refers to it as the finest journey in Spain. And I've always had a romantic thing about Spain anyway. And I thought, you know, this is many, many years ago, and I thought, wouldn't that be really something? And at the time, I was focused on the bull run at Pamplona. And of course, I was living that kind of life back then where that would have been attractive. But that was it. It got filed away and life went on.
And then you picked up your foot.
My son passed. And yes. Not long after that, my partner Diane called me one day and said, hey, there's a trailer I want you to take a look at, movie you might be interested in. And she said, I got to tell you though, it might be a little touchy for you because, you know, the plot involves the death of a child. And so I looked at this trailer and the movie was The Way, Martin Sheen. And so we went to see it. I was totally up for it. Still hadn't connected to what I had read in Michener's book. And when the movie started, that's when I recognized, I'm like, I know this thing, this I've read about this, right? And that just served, I guess, to bring it into present awareness. And the calling of the Camino, if you will, took it from there. Most people I know who have walked the Camino have had a sense of being called to it.
Yeah, that's understandable.
It is remarkable.
Because we are short for time, because this is a podcast, can you go from there and tell us, there's no way you can describe, I want everyone to read the book so they can get a real sense of what this walk was like, this pilgrimage, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but give us a short version of what this pilgrimage was like.
The pilgrimage is, there are several routes one can take. The most common route and the one that I walked is the Camino de Frances, and it begins at the French-Spanish border in the south of France in a town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. It's in the Pyrenees Mountains. And the first day is a trek through a mountain pass to the first stop, which is in Spain across the border. It's also, interestingly enough, the most difficult walk of the entire route. And from there, one walks for usually between 35 and 40 days on an average, 800 kilometers across, 500 miles across the north of Spain. And the pilgrimage route ends in Santiago de Compostela in the region of Galicia at the cathedral, specifically at the reliquary that contains the relics of St. James, the Apostle of Jesus. So that's where the pilgrimage walk ends. Many people, myself included, go on to the coast of Spain at either Murcia or Finisterre and touch the ocean, if you will, thus completing the walk across Spain. And in my case, I stayed there for about 9 days just to do more walking and processing what had just happened.
That's quite a lot to process. And
it really is. Now the pilgrimage typically unfolds in three phases, and I'll try to be concise. The phases would be described as centering experiences. So carnal or physical, mental or psychological, and spiritual. The first part is typically a carnally centered experience because we're expecting the body to, you know, do a 15 or 20 mile hike and then, you know, rest and then get up the next day and do it again.
Do it all over again, yes.
Exactly. for many days. And so it's a very carnal experience. You're focused on the surroundings and the beauty of the Pyrenees and you know, the wine country of Spain. And it's a remarkable experience. But on either side of that centering experience, one finds spiritual experience and psychological experience. There's a lot of remembrance, a lot of recollection. And then the second phase of this, which typically happens as one crosses the middle part of the pilgrimage, the meseta, this is about 240 kilometers of, in my case, solitary walking through very bland, plain country that forces the attention inward. And here we spend time in the mind, and we remember, and we recollect, and we reflect. And then after the meseta, that long flat stretch, we come into the region of Galicia and the mountains, and we ascend in the mountains. We ascend out from that mental mind-oriented place into the realm of spirit. And again, these are all centering experiences to either side of that or the other two. So it's very much a, you know, it's integral. It's this idea of wholeness comes into play. But the one thing that I wanted to say about this, and this kind of goes back to what we were saying before, Tom. And I want to read this from the magazine article. This also I mentioned in the book as well, but I'll read this version because it's a little
shorter.
Please
do, yes.
On a cloudless morning, I was walking in the company of a German man, one who didn't feel the need to fill silence with words. We'd been chatting for a few kilometers of walking, but had become quiet. The thin yellow band of the road was coursing through the green meadows before me, revealing some pilgrims making their way in small bands, others walking alone. In a fleeting moment, something changed. I saw them as a single entity in collective movement. I saw myself as part of that movement. There was no separation, no real difference, only the one of us, our collective heart. I no longer saw pilgrims, but pilgrimage, stitched into the fabric of the road and meadows of the sky and the world itself. Though little more than a glimpse at the time, it could never be forgotten or unseen. It became a forever truth, a joyful requiem of apartness. It changed everything. Now in these moments, these exceedingly uncertain and troubling times, when once again the world as I know it is ending, that forever truth is reawakened. I am not in competition with my fellows. I am in cooperation, for the whole thing is woven together seamlessly. You, me, the world itself. Despite the notion of distancing, we are inseparable. Our experience is global, collective, and universal. Our attention has been secured. What shall we do? And I think that's where we're brought to at this.
That's where we're brought to. I agree. I bet when I read your article, that was the paragraph that I picked out that I was going to talk about. You already identified it, and that's wonderful. Because now we are all one. And if you can see it from the way you describe it, we will not feel as alone as most of us feel many days.
Right.
How do you see that working in your daily life today?
You know, the idea, now this is something I do not want to for one moment portray myself here as St. Stephen. I mean, I may have been privileged with certain experiences, but, you know, I still may be a little impatient with the slowpoke in front of me on the road. You know, this is not something that I've achieved, you know, dominion over or anything like that.
You may be a pilgrim, but not a saint.
Exactly. Yes, we are not saints. I've seen that somewhere. And the idea of pilgrimage is interesting. And I was so glad that you used that to describe me as a pilgrim, because in the one sense, I guess I am a classic pilgrim, but in another sense, I think we all are. I think we are all on pilgrimage, and that if we view life as pilgrimage, then we can look at these things a little bit more dispassionately. On pilgrimage, one takes one's backpack in the morning, puts everything, you know, we own, we put everything we own into it, we shoulder the pack and we walk, and we simply see what happens. What does the day bring? And we try to understand maybe that a little deeper, or allow it to bring us to some place that that's been troubling us or that needs a resolution, what have you. And I would submit that things like this, even things as big as this, we can take that and bring it within. Because Tom, if there's anything I've ever learned in my life, it's that the answer is not found in the proverbial out there. It is always, always, always found within.
Yes,
to and to get quiet.
One of my favorite t-shirts that I've seen recently is called, says on it, "Begin Within."
Mm-hmm.
And that is so right. So absolutely.
Absolutely. So this kind of brings me to a place, and again, this is just a personal thing. I wouldn't impose this on anybody, but if in fact we are one, if that is even possible, and we can look at what's going on through that filter, the one thing I know, the one happy outcome, one of perhaps many, is that I am less fearful. And the reason I am less fearful is that I am more loving. And I firmly believe that love and fear are opposites. So where I have more of one, I will much likely have less of the other.
Yes, and I can agree with that tremendously, because I see myself for the world that there are two choices, love and fear. And when it's possible to come from love, you can experience life as I hear you experiencing it.
Right.
And
right.
For all of us right now, the more we can experience love for whoever in all of these turmoil times, the more love we can experience, the less fear, as you say, because everything out there, it seems to be combining to make for fear. But inside, we can still find love, as you have explained.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And we need to have that love for everybody around us right now. And be understanding that, as you said, what you experienced, which was horrific before you even went on your pilgrimage, is not just you. Many, many people have experienced such difficult times.
And much worse,
and people will again. But being able to find the gift in it, as you are talking about, that's what makes a difference. That's what makes it possible. And I feel that I relate to you tremendously on that point, Stephen, because that's why I'm doing this show.
Right.
To find the gift, which is to find people like you and others and bring it to other people about, here's how we might try coping with where we are today. And you are giving us a great example of how to do that. What's your day like? We're going to end here. Oh, I've got two things I got to do.
Sure.
What is your day like today? And then I want to ask how people can reach you. But what's your day like today, each day?
The first thing I do before my feet even hit the floor, Tom, is I acknowledge the sense of gratitude. And I try, again, underline the word try, as best I can to put my attention, to let the attention of the world fall away for a little bit and put my attention on presence, practicing presence. And presence of what you can fill that blank in. That's up to the individual, I think, to determine how the language they use around that. And then from that point, I do a period of prayer and meditation. I have some set readings I do. Among them, I always read out of Merton's book, as I mentioned before, and others. I'm not limited by, you know, labels of, you know, what religion or philosophy anyone, you know, follows. It's what resonates with me. Then typically I tend to the body and I make sure to get a walk in. As long as it isn't, you know, a blizzard or a driving rainstorm, I'm out walking. And typically that's anywhere from 4 to 6 miles a day just to keep it up. I like to think I'm Camino ready at any time. And then I have a simple job that I do, just a simple part-time thing that fills the remainder of the day. And then the evenings are usually spent in the company of others, either my partner Diane or like-minded individuals, if you will. So that's pretty much a simple contemplative life.
Yes, definitely, that just lends itself to a
peaceful, loving experience. And I'm at the age where I'm certainly not interested in creating any more drama or anxiety. I think there's quite enough of that going around.
Right, but what you have created, and what I'll end this talk with, is a wonderful book. And this book is called Into the Thin. And it describes your whole experience, or your experience, on the pilgrimage.
Right.
When has this come out now? I think it should be out this month, or is it already out?
It is. It actually published on the 15th of September. So it's available any place that books are sold, online or otherwise, it can be found. So
it's Into the Thin by Stephen Drew. And what we need to ask here, because you have brought up so many fascinating things, people may wish to talk to you about it or contact you about it. If
sure.
they were to wish to touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that? How would you like people to reach out to you?
Absolutely. And this has been happening more since the book published, which is another delightful gift, if you will. I have a website, author Stephen Drew. That's Stephen with a PH, authorstephendrew.com. Right. And then they can go to the contact page, and there's an email there that they can use. I'm also on Facebook at author Stephen Drew.
Again, very good.
That's Stephen with a PH.
Excellent, Stephen. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing this, and thank you for being who you are. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
And thank you all for listening to this episode of the Heart of Healing, the pandemic episodes.